Welcome to Digital Stratosphere, the podcast that helps organizations throughout the world with their digital transformation journeys. Here, you will find independent and technology-agnostic advice with no software vendor sales spin to help you make the best decisions for your organization. Whether you are in the process of selecting technology, in the midst of your transformation, or trying to get your initiative back on track, Digital Stratosphere provides expertise and best practices to help.
I am Kyler Cheatham, Global Marketing Director here at Third Stage Consulting Group, and I'm excited to welcome Josh Noble, VP of Sales at ShipOffers, to our live stream this week. So thanks so much, Josh, for joining us.
Yeah, excited to be on the call.
So we are talking about sales tech specifically today and the digital transformation specifically within Josh's industry, which is shipping and fulfillment. So obviously there's been a huge digital transformation and a very exciting years that Josh is going to kind of take us through how you leverage sales tech to make sure that you can achieve the most business value for your organization. So with that, Josh, will you kind of just tell us a little bit about yourself and your role in ShipOffers?
Yeah, definitely. So like Kyler said, Josh Noble, I'm the VP of Sales over at ShipOffers. ShipOffers, we are a product sourcing and fulfillment company, been in business over 21 years, specifically working with online marketers in the e-commerce and direct response industries. So we help with sourcing products, basically anything coming in from China, widgets that you see like on your Facebook, people selling products who don't want to sell on Amazon. We're helping bring those products in or helping manufacture them here in the US as well. We contract manufacture with 8 different contract manufacturers and then warehouse them and then integrate with their CRM shopping carts and provide all the back-end logistics of shipping directly to the consumers.
Very cool. Definitely an exciting time to be involved in not only the e-commerce industry, but also the shipping and fulfillment industries. We know we've seen a lot of disruption and changes within that industry over the last couple of years with the COVID-19 pandemic. So can you tell us a little bit about your footprint from a client or partner standpoint?
Yeah, so I mean, we work with clients. Well, one, we ship all over the world, but also our clients are located all over the world. So primarily Europe, Australia, Asia, then also within the US and Canada are where most of our clientele is based out of. But and then from a customer standpoint, you know, they're working everywhere and are they're selling everywhere. And then from a partner standpoint, we work with a lot of strategic partners for what we do, offering different solutions to them, whether it's from the processing, customer service, whatever they need. So we have partners lined up for our clients and they're primarily in the US, but we have some partners outside the US as well.
Very cool. And then so can you kind of give us the 60-second overview of how your last 2 years have been? Just kidding. That's totally impossible. But
it's volatile. It's been a lot of growth with a lot of headaches.
Yeah. So can you kind of tell us what your client community has experienced during that time?
Yeah. I mean, from a client standpoint, I mean, there's been a ton of growth, obviously, in the space with e-commerce and selling online. So everyone's been growing rapidly. But supply chain has definitely felt disruptions. And so, and we're right in the middle of that and where our clients are trusting us for that. So that's been a fun year of kind of going through that. But even then, from a communication standpoint with our clients, our industry that we're in is very much about connection at like events and things like that. Mm-hmm. From a sales standpoint, that's where we got a lot of our clients from. We're at trade shows or conferences. And that obviously got disrupted from a sales standpoint, we had to completely, go a different direction. And our clients from a being able to find traffic through affiliates and things like that mm-hmm. had to go a completely different direction because a lot of these conferences is where they'd find partnerships as well.
So what kind of different directions or what kind of tactics were you able to excavate from this really intense period of changes?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, everyone kind of tried the virtual event type thing and it went well. Some were better than others, I guess you could say, but really just in like different social media communities like Facebook groups and things like that. And we were able to be a part of those and find a lot of connection on there and be able to, people found a sense of kind of community through that, which is what a lot of our clients were looking for. We're working with a lot of small businesses, solopreneurs who they're generating, you know, millions a month in revenue, but it's pretty much a couple people and they outsource a lot of their teams. So they're looking for that community. And so having Facebook groups, having a lot of video conferences and things like that is really where we had to focus on and get better at as a team, because we couldn't jump on a plane and go see our clients.
Right, definitely. And I want to get in a little bit later to those strategic partnerships, because I think that's so interesting in, you know, the evolution of developing and harvesting those relationships in a digital ecosystem. But from a basic shipping and fulfillment standpoint, what are some of the challenges that you faced as an organization in knowing that that entire industry was sort of flipped upside down?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a slow rollout of pain points, because the supply chain, we're still feeling it now.
Yeah,
honestly, okay. It's probably worse now than it was a year ago from a supply chain logistical standpoint.
Awesome.
At first, it was our staffing. Just at the warehouse. I mean,
right.
That sure. was a huge pain point because of all everything with COVID, no one had to go to work. And so we had to drastically increase our starting pay to incentivize that and really kind of cater around making sure that we were meeting everyone's needs, I guess you could say, from a hiring standpoint. And then from there, from a supply chain side, I mean, getting product in, you know, all of our products, we do a lot with like supplements and nutraceutical products that are manufactured in the US. All those raw materials coming in from overseas, that got delayed. Outside of that, all packaging, honestly, that was probably the biggest and still is the biggest headache, are bottles.
Interesting.
And it became kind of a logistical nightmare. And so we worked hard with our manufacturers and partners to do a lot of blanket POs and overbuy. Honestly, and
yeah,
with the growth, we were fortunately in a good position to do that, which enabled us to continue to grow.
That's excellent. I know we talk a lot about, specifically from a small business, small to medium sized business standpoint, is that inventory challenge and that surplus. And a lot of times our team members don't have that capital to be able to invest in that surplus of inventory.
Yep.
So it's amazing that you guys were able to support that those smaller market opportunities.
Yep.
With those raw materials. So on kind of that supply chain diversification, were you able to stick with the same manufacturers or did you have to diversify your portfolio?
So, I mean, we have manufacturers that we've worked with since before we were a company. Even the owners, Doug and Tony, they used to sell products online 20 plus years ago before ShipOffice was in business. And they, we've had some long relationships. So the trust there and the flexibility there, you know, they're willing to work with us. So we made sure we're using those, but we did have to go out and expand our partnership and make sure there weren't any bottlenecks. And, because some manufacturers would experience delays or even manufacturers would get shut down for a week during the pandemic. And so we had to diversify in a big way.
That's amazing that you were able to kind of overcome that and still sustain that growth within that marketplace. How would you say, just from, you know, being an expert in this space, that a lot of times that diversification in bigger shipments, like we talk about our construction industry, lumber, we talk about the furniture industry a lot, those bigger types of goods. What is something that you feel like different owners, specifically small businesses, can do to kind of overcome that supply chain strain?
I mean, from a bigger shipment side, we stay away from that personally. obviously we have pallets of product coming in, but shipping direct to consumer, we stick in the smaller packages. But it's hard. I mean, you have to constantly, the squeaky wheel kind of gets things done.
Mm-hmm.
That is what we've noticed, even from a carrier standpoint, because, you know, pallets would be stuck wherever they are. You don't know where they are. And so constantly picking up the phone, dialing. Our purchasing team did a great job of really making sure they're actively in communication with their carriers, manufacturers, everyone at all times, and not just put an order and hoping it shows up when they say it does. So communication and the relationship side of that is huge. And just looking at continuing to evaluate carriers, because we've gone through that several times already this year with evaluating carriers and their pricing, because there's a lot of price increases and they still want our volume, but you kind of have to play the game.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. A lot of times our conversations around supply chain can be through really technical operations. But I think that relationship building is equally as important as being able to leverage that technology to see really the visibility or the breakage within your supply chain. So that's a really unique perspective.
Yeah, we definitely consider ourselves very much a relationship company, not just with our clients or partners, but with our suppliers as well. And it's helped us move things along, especially during the pandemic. That relationship's paid off.
That's excellent. So from a sales standpoint, because I know I asked you to come on here and talk about sales, and now I'm asking you about supply chain and packaging. That's just what I do usually, is, make sure our guests are put on the spot most effectively. So from a sales standpoint, you obviously manage your sales team. And how have you leveraged the technology evolution of being able to grow in that space as a sales organization?
Yeah, so I've been with the company now for a little over 6 years. And when I started, I was a salesperson, I was the account manager, I was the biz dev person, I was basically wearing all the hats on that side of it. And so we didn't have to have systems really, that were duplicatable in a sense. And so over the years, we've gone through multiple CRMs. We used Pipedrive for a while, and now we're using HubSpot because our needs have changed and shifted. We use Asana for project management that kind of plugs in there, and different plugins. There's not for what we do, there's not a good CRM that kind of fits all of our needs. And so it's kind of taking different softwares, and piecing them together to make the system that works. But even then, we've gone from everyone being in office, and now we have remote employees and employees across the country. So it's expanded out. So we've had to improve our systems and our tech to create more visibility, which from a sales standpoint, salespeople are the worst at using systems. I'm a salesperson, logging, tracking, all of that. And so creating systems that are easy for them to use, making sure they're willing to implement it, and getting buy-in from them is super important. It has been.
If you are aiming for transformation success, turn to Third Stage Consulting Group. Third Stage's independent and technology agnostic consulting team helps clients define their digital strategies, define their roadmaps, and manage their transformations. With offices in the US, Europe, and Australia, our team helps the world's most forward-thinking organizations through their transformation pitfalls and risks. If you are embarking on a digital transformation or business change initiative, contact Third Stage Consulting to see how we can help you reach the third stage of transformation success. Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstageconsulting.com.
How you selected a CRM specifically within a high growth environment, because like you said, it was kind of built in-house internally, right? You went to one system and they kind of graduated, if you will, or evolved into another system. So what were some of those requirements or needs that caused you to reevaluate your CRM opportunity and customer relationship management, for those of you that are not in the acronym world?
Yeah. So Pipedrive was actually really good. We used that for a few years. It was just very simple, which is what our team needed. And then going into HubSpot, we needed more marketing capabilities and list management, which HubSpot is very good for that. And then tying in and kind of manipulating a bit for how we wanted to manage our sales pipeline within HubSpot. We don't use it in a traditional fashion, so we worked with their team, which they were really easy to work with, which is a huge thing. But one of our VPs on our team had previous experience with HubSpot at a company. So that, going through the different kind of tutorials from a cost standpoint, it made sense as well. And so you know, after going through it, we're still only scratching the surface, honestly,
yeah,
capabilities, and it's a continued build out.
So when you went through that implementation, if you will, of the technology for your team as the leader, what were some of the pain points that you saw throughout that transition? And like you said, leveraging sales professionals that aren't always kind of in the technical space and making sure that, you know, we are leveraging the technology because it does bring business value.
Yeah. And so the technology for us, it brings value in multiple ways, but a big way is making sure we're not leaving opportunities on the table, right? And so with our sales team, and it starts with the top with myself using it and actually buying in and leading by example a bit there. But then from there, you know, making sure that KPIs, because we, from our sales team, we have different bonus structures. And one of the KPIs is to make sure that you're hitting kind of your logging metrics and things like that within HubSpot. So incentivizing that. And then from there, I'd also talk about making sure that our sales team are focused on the right things. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, when I was in a, you know, sales executive role, doing the logging of everything, because our clients are communicating across like multiple channels, like Slack, Skype, email, phone, WhatsApp, like you name it, they're communicating with us on it.
Wow.
And so trying to get all those to funnel into one CRM is not realistic. And so you have to do a lot of logging. And what we did is we really tried to enable the salesperson to focus on what they do best, which is the relationships, the networking, being in touch with the client, and then bringing in support staff to support them with a lot of the logging and also the implementation internally.
Yeah, I think a lot of times CRMs seem much more simple than they actually are, specifically from a sales standpoint.
Right.
And it's very easy, at least in our experience, to fall down that rabbit hole of, you know, all of a sudden you were a salesperson and now you're spending 20% of the time that you could be selling actually logging. And Eric and I talk about this a lot. And I always say, you know, I am a, you know, self-aware resistor in the sales area, because I always was, you know, hey, I'm selling the most, like, I don't need to log any of this. Obviously, my process is working.
Right.
So if I worked for you, would you A, fire me, or B, how would you help me understand the overall motivation? Obviously, KPIs are there, but when you have a high performing, you know, salesperson, they're already meeting a lot of those KPIs.
For sure.
So how do you kind of communicate that change management messaging?
I mean, I think it's a leadership conversation with them. I mean, if they're super high performing, if they're not being a leader and buying into the culture of the team and everything and really resisting that, that's a different conversation and a bigger issue, which I've had that. But if they're bought into the team and they're all about helping lead, they're going to want to lead by example, one. But two, I also don't want to take away from what they're doing. And so I think the support staff, like, that's what I did for myself, and it helped. And so knowing that, and then enabling my team to get support around it, we do kind of like a drainers and drivers list of like things you love, things you hate,
yeah,
and what you do. And so identifying those things that take away from what drives them, which ultimately salespeople are very money driven, and, you know, goal driven. And so behind that, being able to allow them to focus on that, because they're driving business for the company. And if they're doing a great job of it, but they need help with some of the behind the scenes stuff, that's where you have to bring in support.
Absolutely. And I want to get to some questions from our audience here, as we always do. So this one is from Third Stage ourselves. So why is change management so hard? This is a great article that walks through those challenges. So we're sharing that. But I also want to hear from a sales standpoint, why is change management so hard? Because a lot of times, at least in our experience, we always say, even if there's no background in sales, which our marketing team has here at Third Stage, but even our technical requirements analysts say that salespeople are the hardest when it comes to change management. So why do you think that is?
I think that everyone has their own way of kind of tracking things. And wanting to do things from a sales perspective. Like, I have my piece of paper that I have next to me all day, right? Which is where I have my schedule, take my notes, do whatever, which is fine for me, but it also has to then go into the system. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where salespeople struggle, is they're very good at kind of how they operate, and they know, you know, they don't need to log all this stuff because they're not even using the system fully, but the system is there and it helps them get reminders in ways they don't even realize. But they're focused over here and it works for them, but then getting them to buy into the system can be hard. And so I think it's just kind of a different, it's kind of a different person. It's kind of like the hunter versus nurturer mentality a little bit, honestly. And it's how we split out roles between sales and account management.
Yes.
Because it is two different mindsets. And so having them, it's not just with our CRM, it's all processes.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And all processes that the salespeople follow, it's constant reinforcement of, hey, we got to kind of follow these steps, because they're trying to move things along faster, which it's, you don't want to discourage that either. And so you kind of have to adapt a little bit. Just being a salesperson, that's what I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Balance, right? Yeah. It's all about balance. We talk a lot about how to overcome change management issues, especially in the resistance in departments or areas within the organization that can be challenging. And a lot of times what we find is purpose is really what's behind a lot of that resistance, is a misunderstanding of like, hey, is this going to make me sell less, this new process or this new technology? And I wanted to see from a sales leader perspective, would you say that that is a main motivator as well, is just understanding and communicating the purpose of this new process or change?
I think I agree. The purpose is a huge piece of it, but also the benefit behind the purpose, like for them.
For sale.
And so you kind of spin things in a way that they can kind of see how, okay, if I do this, it's going to equate to this, which will help the sale go through. And so you're showing the bigger picture. And I mean, as a company, you know, as a whole, we've gone through a ton of changes, even because we've, over the past couple of years, we've basically like, we've 3x'd. And from employees, when I started, we had 11 employees, and now we have 95 employees. And so as a company, we've it's a whole different culture, which the people who've been there for a while, which they have to experience a lot of that change management. New people coming in, it's very easy. It's the people who've been there who are stuck in their ways. Like it takes a process, but it starts from the top down, and it starts with the leadership team. And if the leadership's bought in and aligned on it and all communicating on it, it'll trickle down.
Yeah, well said, definitely. So knowing that you had that homegrown kind of experience and then actually went to kind of an off the shelf, if you will, system, we see a lot of times that organizations that go through that have this tribal knowledge, specifically in the sales organization, right? Like they know how to do this. They've always known how to do it. However, it's never been documented. It's never been communicated or scaled. So I'm wondering, in the kind of shipping and fulfillment industry, it seems like that tribal knowledge would be really important to scale within the requirements of a system. Is that assumption correct, or can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, for sure. And we actually just went through, because when you're growing and like we rocketed up and then it's kind of leveled off a little bit, which is great because now we can catch up to the growth. And it's a revamp of all of our SOPs, honestly, like not just within the sales team, but all departments. And when you're growing that quick, you have to just kind of go. It's hard to work on it versus in it. But now we're at a point where we can actually, we've stabilized a little bit, which is good. And it's allowing us to really focus on processes. So those processes for fulfillment, like the crazy thing is every single client is completely different. And so each client essentially has an SOP, because like you can bundle some together and we have different kind of client avatars for how we look at clients and how we ship them. But to a T, I mean, we do private label with our supplements. And so everyone's labels are different and how they want things packaged is different. So you really have to have SOPs for each client, and it changes. So a lot of communication. We rely on a lot of different, we use Asana, like I said, but other tools to, you know, communicate other departments, because we are very much reliant on, we are the wing to communicate with our clients and making sure things are implemented properly. And we move fast. We try to implement within a day or two.
Wow, that's really impressive, especially in a high growth, very reactive state. It sounds like it's hard to be strategic when you are kind of, you know, just keeping your head above water at that point. It sounds like, you know, the technology and the enablement is really an asset to be able to do that. It's just about making sure that everyone in the organization knows it's an asset as well. But we have another question here, great one to you. So it says, Josh, what are the metrics and KPIs you incentivize to encourage user adoption across a new CRM?
Yeah, so one of the big things, and this is a lot, it's probably a little bit more on the account management side of things, honestly. But even on the sales side, we're tracking metrics based on like call login and things like that, which is very basic and whatnot. But making sure we're looking at also like from a client onboarding perspective, if there's an issue with the onboard, like how many onboards can we bring through that don't have something happen down the road, right? Yeah. And I think looking at that is very helpful. But then with our team, they're very much incentivized to make sure that our clients are coming on happy and that there's good feedback. So we're obviously getting reviews and getting feedback from all of our customers based on onboarding experience, and that factors into it a bit. But then also communication touch points is a huge one that we're tracking. And that all is being pulled. You know, that was kind of the pivot for us, is we would track things differently. For all our KPIs now, I pull them directly from our CRM. I'm not trying to manipulate data to figure out a KPI. Right. I'm just pulling straight from the CRM, which my team knows that, and they're very aware. So if they did something, it's not going to show up or get credit on the KPI if they didn't log it.
Right. Yeah, just another kind of nudge tactic for that user adoption. Certainly, that makes a lot of sense. And then, you know, I think a lot of businesses experience kind of that diversification in setting KPIs, not only as a sales organization, but across the organization. So I wondered if you could kind of speak to how technology has enabled you to set enterprise-wide goals that can then trickle down to that alignment you talked about earlier.
Yeah, from a technology standpoint, I mean, we're doing an overhaul of all of our systems too at the same time, because of where we're at as a company now. So we're bringing in new softwares from a WMS and from our shipping software. And so that's been a lot, but looking at, I guess just looking at kind of the goals and where we want to take the company, each department is operating a little bit differently from different systems. And so, making sure everything we want to do is very trackable from a report side of things, not trying to log things in a different way. And I think that's where we've done a good job as a company, is, you know, the owners have their vision and they have, you know, kind of where we want to go, what spaces we want to get into, how we want to evolve. And then it's on us to kind of implement within our departments and then collaborate with the other departments. And so everyone does things a little different. Which I think is good and bad within our company. But I mean, just making sure that, I guess from a KPI standpoint, making sure that everything is just able to be pulled from a very trackable source is what makes it easiest.
Yeah, and it sounds like you guys have an alignment around integration points, which we always see is, you know, really the most important part when you are using a lot of best of breed systems. So HubSpot, warehouse management, you know, all different types of accounting, finance, those types of things. And then I just would like to tell you that some people that could help you with that if, you know, ShipOffers ever need.
I've heard of a company.
Yeah, you have. Good. But in all seriousness, I think that's the biggest piece that we always help our clients to have that visibility, because that's really the first step. Is there's a huge difference between being siloed and being diversified as an organization. And it sounds like ShipOffers has, throughout this, you know, massive growth, which is super impressive, you've still stayed in as an alignment as you can in leveraging the data points that you have available. So very cool story.
It's like a double-edged sword. I mean, we're siloed, but I think our dev team in-house has done a pretty good job of making all these systems communicate. And really what they ended up doing is we kind of have our own custom brain in the middle where everything's kind of feeding into.
And that's mothership, if you will.
Exactly. There you go.
Excellent. That's very cool. Well, definitely such a great story. And ShipOffers, we did link them here, and we'll go ahead and tag them in our posts as well to check them out.
If you are involved in any sort of digital transformation or business change initiative, you will want to download the 2021 Digital Transformation Report. With its comprehensive overview of business and technology trends and best practices, this report is a must-have guide for any transformation project or executive team. Download this free report by visiting Third Stage Consulting at thirdstage-consulting.com. You can also visit our website to learn more about us or download independent reports, videos, and other best practices. Again, visit thirdstage-consulting.com today to learn how to take your transformation to the third stage of success.
I want to shift gears a little bit, Josh, because we've talked about what it's like to manage your internal systems, your sales team, your resourcing. I want to talk a little bit about your clients and helping them move to kind of that e-commerce model, optimize it, and what that has looked like for them over the last 2 years. Because I assume they've experienced some forced digital transformations.
Yeah, I mean, the whole direct response e-commerce space, which direct response is like the think like late night infomercial meets the internet, pretty much, where they're sending you to a pretty aggressive sales page to have you buy a product versus like a store online, which is more e-commerce. A lot of that's kind of merging together now too, honestly. But a lot of our clients, you know, they're very dependent on the traffic. And I think that's where you've seen a lot of things evolve, good and bad. Like any iOS update, everyone freaks out. For how that's going to impact it. Facebook impacts traffic in a huge way. And so there, we feel that on our end when there's issues there. But even from like a tracking standpoint, all the companies are trying to get better to be able to track their, you know, their costs per an acquisition with the client or with the customer, their lifetime value of a customer. There's so many more tools that have come out for these marketers that enable them to get really kind of honed in on what their real metrics are. Because if they flutter the wrong, you know, one way or the other, if they go down at all, they can go out of business pretty quick. And so working with them, and that's where we have a lot of partners that can help our clients with their metrics, with making sure that they know their data and what they're doing and what their costs are, because, you know, they go from, you know, selling a few hundred units a month to doing 10,000 units a day.
Wow.
Very big difference. And if your numbers are off at all, you're in trouble quick.
So speaking of kind of that master data management in kind of that e-commerce space, I'm curious if those new privacy settings, specifically our Apple new privacy settings that we've seen in the industry, has impacted the ability to do that? And how have your partners, to the best of your knowledge, helped your clients overcome that?
Yeah, so that was a huge impact. And it's, you still feel it today. I think it was iOS 14 update is what everyone talked about. But yeah, that was a big impact on a lot of our clients for how they're using that data that they're getting and sharing data. But they get creative. Marketers are pretty clever, and they're always kind of pushing the envelope, and then all these rules come out and they change everything. But it's interesting, like a lot of the traffic has gone over to TikTok now and like different verticals, and YouTube's back and Google's doing great. Like it kind of evolves, and it's interesting to see because they're pretty good at figuring it out.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's just for us, it's a different perspective, right? A different way to massage and storytell with your data to understand your overall customer base. But data still is incredibly important. And it's a lot of times I think some of our more technical community doesn't understand how master data management can trickle into sales. So I'm wondering if you can kind of give us a good kind of lens into how data influences your overall sales strategies.
So our sales strategy, we're looking at, we have a pretty specific client we're looking for. So for ourselves, like, you know, I was talking about a lot of how our customers acquired, our clients acquire customers, but for us, it is very much, we focus a lot on partnerships and being able to track those partnerships and what they're doing and how, you know, they're growing with us is huge. And that's kind of what our data analysts, scientists, whatever, look at. I get a report every Monday, but, which is super helpful. But, you know, we're really looking at who can we strategically align with that can help our clients. And then in turn, you know, we share the same type of client. And so that's where we spend a lot of our energy. And then also just taking care of our clients. I mean, providing them with the data that they need is probably the most important thing, because, and I think that's one thing that we've done a really good job of, is we have kind of our generic data we give our clients, but we do a ton of custom reporting, a ton of custom analysis that we provide to our clients, because for however they run their business, they need that data, which enables them to either spend more money or tweak things and spend more money on ads or tweak things if they need to.
So within that paid media support and developing those strategic relationships and partnerships, I only assume that over the last 2 years, that must have been really hard to do in a completely digital environment. Most of the strategic relationship leaders within our industry, at least, are face-to-face all the time. Right. So has that been a huge shift for you?
From finding new, like, our current partners is actually pretty good. Like, we did a good job of, like, communicating and getting on whatever, Google Meet, whatever. A lot of gifting. but outside of that, actually going and finding new partners and new business, we had to take a whole different approach to it and be more, like I said, active in the groups and whatnot. And even from a vetting perspective, it's a little bit different, because a lot of our relationships come, like I said, through meeting in person, breaking bread, whatever that is. But it completely changed. And the nice thing is everyone went through that together.
True.
In our industry. And good so point. Everyone was very open to knowing that something different was needed, and everyone was looking for something different. And so we did rely on a lot of different communities and a lot of different, like, Slack channels and things like that.
So, very deep question, because, you know, I like to really get deep sometime. What is the impact of connection in a digital environment versus a face-to-face environment? How are those different?
I mean, my belief is I take face-to-face any day over digital, but that's just kind of how we've operated. I think you can do it very well in a digital way, but how you approach it is everything. And some people do it the right way and some people do it the wrong way. There's kind of like a natural progression that happens when you meet in person. Online, people come off, I mean, it's crazy, like LinkedIn, like you get all these spam, whatever, everyone tries to blow you up to sell you something. And that's not how I would do it. It has to be very intentional. And the way we approach it is, how can we add value? And trying to add value, not even from what the services or solutions we offer, but from, we're a resource of connections in the space. And if we add value to you, even if you're not working with us, it'll come back. And so we got more into putting out more content, which we had never been a big content company. Even our website, we did a little revamp. We're doing a much larger revamp now. But making sure we're actually putting stuff out on social, having our blogs going, having everything out there, it's kind of necessary. to a certain extent. But it wasn't.
Yes.
Which is the funny thing, because most of their people were kind of off the grid, and a lot of people had to kind of come back on.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I also know someone that can help you with content if you're interested. And just for a little behind the curtain knowledge, Josh Noble is the very lucky husband of our global content manager and strategist, Parisa Noble. So she runs the show here, and I just get to talk to people on our digital marketplace. So just a little look behind the curtain there in our content management strategy here at Third Stage. But definitely really interesting in the fact that you have to kind of almost create that persona, that legitimacy and authenticity within that space when it wasn't really something that was needed before, because it was that human dynamic of working with one another.
It completely changed. And it's just interesting how we adapted. I mean, even from working remotely, like everything changed, and I think we've embraced it and we didn't skip a beat. So.
Well, good. I mean, I think that speaks a lot to company culture when you're able to embrace change and innovation and new challenges. And that's one thing I really wanted to ask you about, because, you know, a lot of times that can completely derail an entire organization if you don't have a culture where change is not scary, it is embraced. So how did your company culture set you up for success in being able to make that very significant pivot?
So we, like I said, our office side probably now has like 35, 40 employees. And we always operated very like open door policy, like open dialogue, communication and whatnot. And so, you know, but it was a culture of you're in the office, you know, from 8:30 to 4:30 is kind of what it was. And then pandemic happened and everyone's remote. And, I'd say 95% of our team did a really good job of buying in. The people who didn't really buy into it kind of found themselves opted out. But I think the people who bought in, you know, I think they appreciated the company, like actually like putting the employees' needs first with everything going on. And, you know, cause we were, you know, in the fulfillment space deemed an essential business and whatnot. And, you know, but we made sure to, you know, anyone who didn't need to be in the office wasn't in the office.
Yeah.
So, but the buy-in, it worked out, and having that kind of already open communication style that we had where, mm-hmm. you know, anyone from any department would walk into my office and ask questions and whatnot. It kind of rolled over, I think, a bit online from the, you know, different text messages, chats, whatever we had within our company. We use all the Google stuff, so all the Google chats. Everyone was very bought in on contributing within those and not keeping things to themselves.
And where did that culture of, or that open door communication policy, where does that start within an organization?
It starts with the owners. Like, they have an open door policy and they're in here every day and kind of leading by example. And like, my belief is everything starts from the top down. If mm-hmm. if you're not doing it, you can't expect your team to do it.
Absolutely. And so what would you say to some of our audience that are working for Fortune 200, Fortune 500, board of director based companies? How do you, as a manager, create that open door policy within your circle of influence?
I mean, like with my peers, with the other VPs in the company.
I mean, like, so within a bigger like corporate culture, right? Yeah. There's only so much you can control as a leader of your team.
Yep.
So as a team lead, how do you create that kind of practice of excellence in a feedback area when maybe you don't have owners that are right next to you, right?
For sure. I mean, in a company that big, you know, I think it you as kind of the leader of that group get to create some of the culture within it, and it may be a little bit against the grain of what the company does to a certain extent, but it should still align with the overall company's culture. But I think you have to, I mean, I'll go work out on the floor with my team for a minute. Like, I think it's just being making them feel you kind of in the trenches with them is super important. And then you get that buy-in reciprocated back.
Sure. I think that ability to bond and be able to, you know, showcase that you're, as their leader, are experiencing their role. We talked a lot in a recent interview this week with one of our change practitioners, who's our another director, one of my director peers. And she talked a lot about that ability to empathize with your overall team as a leader. Yep. And then when you do have a change, they trust you. Yep. And we talked to also the head of Lockheed Martin HR, because I talked to him about how you could not measure trust. And he taught me that you actually can, and it's the attrition of the employee.
Yep.
So I totally understand what you're saying. And I think that is a great method and approach to create that overall loyalty.
Well, and you have to speak to everyone different too. Like, everyone has their own kind of how they like to be led and managed. And so you kind of have to adapt. It's like, I think there's probably two thoughts of like, one, people are going to buy into your management strategy, or two, you have your management strategy, which is to kind of help different personality types and different types of people. Because my sales operations person is very much different than my salesperson, which sales ops does all the implementation. And then versus like more of a sales coordinator admin, like you have different kind of personalities on the sales team, and you kind of have to speak to them a little bit different and even dangle the carrot that gets them excited a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. And we experienced that same type of dynamic on the client services side. You know, the reason we are a boutique digital transformation and independent and technology agnostic agency is because we match our team to the style of our client. So totally understand that. So in our last couple minutes here, Josh, I want to ask you kind of the future state of shipping and fulfillment. Again, nobody has a crystal ball, but when it comes to, will this kind of unrest, do you feel like it will normalize at some point? And then also to add on to that, from a strategic relationship building, do you feel like we'll continue to be kind of in this hybrid gray space? Or do you feel like that industry specifically, which you're an expert in, will move back to that in-person overall integration?
Right. So from a shipping fulfillment standpoint, like logistically, drones. No, basically, I think over the next couple of years, things will normalize a bit. But right now, I mean, it's Murphy's Law of everything that's happened, right? Mm-hmm. From the pandemic, from everything going on right now, like you have so much inflation, like it's all kind of tied together too. Mm-hmm. Eventually it has to normalize a little bit. Costs have gone up. I don't know if they'll go back down, but hopefully they stop going up.
Certainly.
And so, but I think everyone's kind of going through it a bit together. And so, yeah, I mean, our talking with our manufacturer suppliers and even FedEx, UPS, UPS, I think intentionally laid off people by raising their, or going back to lowering their basically entry-level wage that they did during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think things are, from like domestically, are starting to level off, but I think international is going to take some time, especially from a supply chain standpoint. Mm-hmm. And then your other question had to do with from a how we get business sales standpoint.
Yeah. How do you get business?
With that, I think it's going to be a hybrid.
Even
now, like we've been doing events or back traveling and stuff quite a bit this year. We have more conferences, events than ever. And with that, the Facebook groups are more active than ever too. So, I think it's creating more connection, and people are keeping that connection going outside of the event, is what we're seeing. And so it's actually become pretty good. And we have some people on our team, fortunately, who are very active on social media and do a really good job of interacting. And that's probably the hard part, because it adds a whole another like five communication channels that you need to have. So we kind of section it out though. Like this group, I have this person who's kind of focused on that. This group, this person's focused on that, because it's overwhelming. Like,
oh, sure. Yeah.
Sales and biz dev.
Yeah. And I'm sure, like you said, your approach of kind of matching the overall, approach of your employees, you know, if you do have a digital based or digital native that's more comfortable in that area, then you're able to leverage that as opposed to the in-person person. So having that really diversification of talent, I'm sure must be a huge asset.
Yeah. And I think that's, I mean, you kind of figure that out too. Like, we hire for culture versus for based on like skill.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, skill set can be taught to a certain extent. I mean, sales, you got to be somewhat outgoing, but culture is huge. And so being able to kind of work with people and figure out where they actually like to operate, it's been a blessing for sure, because it's kind of naturally progressed the way we wanted it to, with some people being very good. You know, our remote employees, honestly, all of them do a really good job of getting into those social groups because they kind of have to. And our in-office sales team do a really good job of interacting between departments. So they kind of support each other.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, speaking of in-person travel, I heard you were in Mexico or somewhere else. Well, my husband, who works for a third stage, as you all know, was in Aruba. So, you know, Paris and I just were holding down the front.
Yeah, the travel thing is fun. I have a team now, though, so I don't have to go everywhere.
There you go. There you go. Well, thank you so much for your time. So if our audience wants to engage with ShipOffers or learn more about you, what are some opportunities for them to do so?
Yeah, I mean, our website, shipoffers.com, super easy. You can go on there, and if you were, you know, you can fill out a form on there and get in touch, or even email me, which is josh@shipoffers.com. Yeah, feel free to reach out. Happy to answer any questions. And I know this is probably a little different interview than you guys usually do on the show, but I think it kind of sheds a good light on the sales side of it.
Yeah. And for us, we've been working on our human-to-human content development. And I think that's, you know, a huge part of why we like to have this diversification of conversation. Yep. For example, we had an emotional intelligence expert, which is way out of our wheelhouse in the technical space. But what we've learned is, if you don't leverage the human component, the technology component will never be successful. And I think a lot of that can be stemmed from sales. I think, in my perspective, organizational change management is sales strategy. It truly is. It's just, you're selling to your internal employees as opposed to external or B2B customers.
I mean, you're selling, everyone's selling. Like,
yeah.
Everyone's a salesperson, even if they're not a salesperson, is kind of the reality. Like, our purchasing team, like, the biggest thing that they had to learn was, you're trying to, like, yeah, we're buying, we're a buyer in this situation, but the relationship makes buying a lot easier.
Yeah. And that relationship development is really the core to making technology implementation successful. Cause like we talked about that trust internally, and then externally too, if you are servicing a platform, an e-commerce, you know, integration, application management, you know, cloud management, cloud hosting, all of those different things, your client or your partner has to trust you, or that technology is never going to establish the highest business value and reach that ROI objective as it should. So yep.
I agree. They go hand in hand, and that's where, you know, we are good at relationships, and now it's focusing on the tech side of things. And I think as we've brought that up, it's made us not losing the relationship side. That's been kind of the main, honestly, a huge conversation is, just because our tech is doing more heavy lifting, it doesn't mean you can lose the relationship aspect of it. And so having those hand in hand is why we've been experiencing the growth we've had, honestly.
Well, that's excellent. Well, thank you so much for the insight, and congratulations on all this, you know, incredible growth for you and the ShipOffer team. And hopefully we can have you back, or have someone in your kind of wheelhouse back to maybe speak about the technical stuff of supply chain that we always
do. Don't talk to a salesperson about tech. I pretend like I know tech, but yeah, we have some, our developer's been with us for over 20 years, and our senior developer, and we have some good dev guys. You guys can have a fun conversation with that.
Good. Excellent.
Learn more about us and download independent reports, videos, and other best practices at thirdstage-consulting.com.